there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. Stroll over to Twitter, type in This Show Is So Gay. That's our handle. You can follow us there. And, of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a special show we have for you this week. We must get started. For this week's special episode, we're focusing all of our attention on the outrageous new comedy called From Here On Out, which will be premiering on Friday, March 28th, exclusively on Here TV. I watched the first two episodes, and they are indeed outrageous and oh so hilarious. So we have two guests that are pretty integral to the debut of this show, and we're going to get started with the first one right this very second. Terry Ray created, writes, and stars in Here Media's first sitcom, From Here On Out. On the stage, Terry has appeared in countless plays with stars such as Dixie Carter, Elaine Stritch, and Matthew Perry. He was the writer of Hollywood Goes Classical at the famed Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, starring Mickey Rooney, Michael York, Dean Jones, and Rhonda Fleming. He wrote and starred in two more shows at the Pavilion, one with Amanda Bynes and the other one with Hilary Duff. Terry co-wrote and starred in the short film Gaydar, which appeared in over 115 film festivals around the world and reaped in awards. It was selected by the California Independent Film Festival as one of the top 10 short comedy films, not of the year, but of the decade. And the film also inspired Terry and his brother Brett Ray to create the popular Gaydar gun toy, which Terry provides the voice of. You can see him on YouTube. They've used the Gaydar gun on Cloris Leachman and Jim J. Bullock. Terry won the Boston International Film Festival's Best Male Actor Award for his film Cost of Living. He's done so much else, but let's actually stop introducing him and start chatting. Terry Ray, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Well, Lord have mercy. I believe that may have been the best introduction I've ever had in my whole life. Thank you, Ken.
Well, we're so happy to have you. How are things for you, sir?
I am pretty excited about stuff. It's really going well, and thank you for having me on the show.
Well, we're going to get to From Here On Out, because we have a ton to talk about with that show. But first, we got to do a little Terry Ray, This Is Your Life. Are you ready?
Okay, all right.
So you are indeed a native of Ohio.
I am, and you're in Ohio right now, right?
Tell me what I need to know about my new homeland.
Well, it's a great place to grow up. That's one thing. It's easy to get fat there. Because the food is so dang good.
It is something.
Oh my gosh, I know. Every time I go home for Christmas, it's 5 pounds. It's a pound a day. It's ridiculous.
I'm there. I mean, I'm sure I'm svelte, but yeah, no, it's pretty bad here.
Yeah, it's because the food's too good, and they give you big old plates full. My mom's a food pusher. She really is.
We call that an enabler.
She doesn't put it in my mouth. I still do that part, but I still like to blame her.
So that's Ohio. So many fun things. And this is not in any way going to be in chronological order, but you have so many fun things that you've done and so many more to come. But I'm reading how at the age of 18, this is one of the most fun sentences, and I wish I could say it. At the age of 18, he co-starred with Patricia Heaton as a singing Chinese cook masquerading as a Native American.
That's true. That is very true.
My hope was that was in some sort of production and not just like a random Thursday night.
It was. It was in Ohio. It was at Ohio State University, right there.
And what was the production?
It was called Goldust, which was a musical adaptation of Molière's The Miser. And it took place in the Old West, and it was super funny and fun to do. And Patty Heaton was a grad student, and I was a little freshman, and it was great.
I love it. I read that you are a former student, because there's going to be this whole game show thing we're talking about, but let's start with that you were a former student of the one and only Charles Nelson Reilly.
Oh, yes. Charles was a huge influence on me. I loved him. He was a great, great teacher. Talented. I don't think people know how talented a director and a teacher he was. They just know he was funny from Match Game and other TV things, but an amazing acting teacher and an amazing director. And he did me the wonderful favor of playing my uncle in the film Gaydar that you mentioned in the opening. And it was the last film role he ever did.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was such an honor for me.
We had Suzanne Westenhofer was on the show a few weeks ago, and we were talking mm-hmm. about game shows, and both of us, and I would imagine countless gays out there, just wish we could have sat between Brett Summers and Charles Nelson Reilly on the Match Game.
I know it. He was magical, and that's what his acting class was like. Literally, you spent the whole time laughing and learning, and he just got me. He didn't fall for any of my tricks because he was the same type as me, and he would call me up on the phone after class, and he'd leave me a message. He'd like, "Terry, it was funny."
Oh man, I would save that for all eternity and just play it back.
It was such a delight. It was for a few years he was my teacher. It was really great.
I love it. And so while Charles Nelson Reilly was a panelist on a game show, you went a different route and you, sir, were a contestant.
Yes. I have been a contestant a few times, yes.
And not only were you a contestant, and I know that you own this, so it's not my – I don't want my listeners to think, oh, this is some gotcha journalism because I don't do that. But you own the fact that MovieLine named you one of the 5 weirdest game show contestants ever.
In the history of game shows. I was flattered because – I was number 5. It wasn't number 1 or 2 or 3 or 4. Those were weird in bad ways, but they added me as number 5 as weird in a good way, and I take that as a compliment. So I'm like, okay, weird in a good way is good.
We have to get into this because I did a little Terry Ray on the game show Scrabble immersion process earlier today. It's quite an experience.
It is. It's a little journey, isn't it? It is a journey to at least see me with hair, at least. There you go.
I mean, do you wake up in the morning sometimes and think, oh, remember that time when I made Chuck Woolery forget everything he had to say?
Oh, my God. You know what? I was so poor. I was so crazy poor that the thought of winning even $100 changed my world. And when I kept winning more money, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, my God, every inhibition was gone. I outed myself on television in 1987.
You not only outed yourself, and by the way, I have a problem with the fact that YouTube calls this a blooper because I don't feel that it is a blooper. There was a point in 1987 when you, Terry Ray, were on the game show Scrabble and essentially told televised audiences and people just all across the world that sometimes you yell out Chuck Woolery's name during sex.
I did say that, and I couldn't put it back in my mouth after it came out, but it did. It really did. And you know what? It was amazing the reaction I got from that. I thought, oh God, this is gonna be bad. But it was great. And here's a real quick story about that. It's like
yeah.
When that aired, people were like really recognizing me a lot, because I couldn't believe how much. That was happening, but like I said, I had no money, and I had never had a stereo, and this is the days when, you know, stereos with all these huge components and all these massive pieces to go to a stereo, right? So I'm like, I'm going to buy me a stereo. So I went to this store, and I bought the stereo, and I had all these different components in this big cart, and I was trying to put it in the car, and this gang came right towards me, and I'm like, I'm going to get mugged. I am going to get mugged. There's no way I can get this stereo in my car. And this gang comes up to me, and they go, Terry from Scrabble. And they helped me load the thing in my car. I was like, what? They want Scrabble? Come on.
Oh, I'm telling you, folks, if it's a snow day where you are and you're like, gosh, I just don't know what to do with my day, do a Terry Ray on Scrabble immersion. I highly recommend it. It's great. It's great. Well, we also have to talk about the Gaydar gun. For folks who don't know what that is, tell them.
The Gaydar gun was born from the short film Gaydar, which is this device that you know, in our fictional world, can detect your percentage of gayness from 0 to 100% on the homometer scale. It goes from 0 to 100, goes in everything between. And so we showed this in film festivals all over the world, and people kept saying, I want a Gaydar gun. I want a Gaydar gun. I wish I could have one in real life. And we're like, let's make it. So my brother really did all the hard work and made it happen, and I got to do the creative, let's write what it says. But it says 650 different things. Like, for example, if you set it on a male target, you and it might say you're 100% gay, you're so gay eating fruitcake would be cannibalism. So, you know, something like that. Or if you're in the middle, it might go, you're like the Statue of Liberty. All are welcome. You know, it's just...
And then... I feel like out of nowhere, and maybe you had just tons of advance warning, but Rosie O'Donnell's up on stage during her show, and she starts hyping it.
She just stood there and pitched it. And this is what happened.
Not a paid endorsement.
No, no. And I was making dinner, and then all of a sudden my phone just started going crazy. And then I'm like, and then I go and I check the website, because you might think that there's just this entire team behind the Gator gun, but actually not. The team be me. So the website was going crazy, and I literally, Christmas stopped. I turned into an elf. I turned my apartment into a shipping Gator gun factory, and 7 days later, I look over at my stove, and there was dinner from the week before.
Oh,
I hadn't even looked at the kitchen. I just, it was like, it was crazy, and it was all because of Rosie O'Donnell just deciding to help me out. Which was amazing.
And then there's the added feature where it also had Rosie love this part too, where there's an alarm clock on it.
Yes. Why not? Why not have it functional? You turn it on the cone. It looks like kind of like the goal was to make it look like a sci-fi 50s retro thing, but it has a cone and you can sit it down and it turns into a clock when it's doing that. So GatorGun.com. Let me plug it. And hey, I can do this. If anybody who goes if they write the word sexy, they'll get $5 off because they listen to your show.
Listeners, go and do it. By the way, if it has any features that resemble a Vitamix, I want one right now. So I'm just putting that out there. If you're looking to add new features for version 3.0.
Got it.
All right. Just putting that out there. All right. That brings us to from here on out. So before we even get into all the ephemera, because I just sat there and was taking notes, pen and paper, because there are some memorable lines that we're going to talk about, where did the idea of from here on out come from?
Well, it kind of evolved. The producer, my producer, David Milburn, is a friend of mine that I met at different events at the Television Academy, and we're both members of the Television Academy, and he watched Gator and really liked it a lot, and he's read everything I've written since then, but they were never, Here TV was never at a place where they were wanting to do a comedy. So I was like, oh, he's trying to like, oh, but I got this really great idea for something or something. And, so I had come to them, with a project that was sort of related to what we wound up doing. And they brought me in for the meeting, but they said, you know what? Why don't you make a show where we're spoofing our network? And I'm like, really? and they're like, yeah, we're ready to do a comedy and let's just spoof our world. And I'm like, it's okay if I do that? And they're like, yeah. So they are brave people. They just unleashed me. And, you know, of course I'm spoofing, and it's not true, but, it's spoofing, and so it just inspired me. So I came up with – I had parameters that I had to do.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, let me find out some characters I really want to play, really want to create. And I wrote the pilot literally in 3 days.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
I was like – it just sort of poured out of me, and I'm like, okay, yeah. And so I gave it to them, and they were like, yes, absolutely, let's do this. And then they just turned me loose and let me do my thing. And every time I turn in a script, I'm like, okay, I love these guys. They're so good to me, but they're going to fire me when they read this script. But they don't.
They don't.
And they let me do more, and it's just so fun. It's so fun. I'm spoofing myself. I'm spoofing our world. I'm spoofing their world. It's great. I mean, like, you've seen the show, so, like, when you see the very first scene, I'm sitting in the sofa getting hired. That's the sofa I sat on when I got hired. When I'm auditioning actors, that's where the actors stood when we really auditioned those people who are playing the people. And I'm sitting in the chair that I'm sitting in. It's like spoofing the whole world. It's just everything I just throw right back into the show.
Well, let me set it up for folks. So the official line is that the show centers on the adventures of an aging gay writer, Jimmy Randall.
The aging part. wasn't my idea.
Yeah, by the way, didn't think that it was. Wanted to check in on that. Was feeling pretty confident. So let's just say it centers on the adventures of a fabulous gay writer, Jimmy Randall, as he tries to get his dream project made into a television series. And so the fictional network, which coincidentally has the same name as the network on which it airs, has said, look, this main character has got to be hot and shirtless and do sex scenes, and also he has to be openly gay, and the big twist is that the actor hired is not indeed openly gay and is gasp straight, and you all must navigate that.
Right, right. It's a gay 30 Rock Tootsie twist.
Love it. Let me throw out some lines out at you and get your reaction, because you wrote this stuff, so this is some, and I was taking good notes. I guess my general question is, so how much of a spoof is it really? You know, right at the start, you're saying, look, maybe less skin, more plot, but that's not what the network is necessarily looking for, because when you look at shows like Dante's Cove and The Lair, there's pretty short on plot and pretty a lot on skin. So how much of a spoof are we talking here?
I am spoofing that, but... And I, you know, they told me at the very beginning, they're like, okay, well, we do want a certain amount of makeout scenes and we do want a certain amount of skin. And I'm like, okay, so if I'm going to make a comedy, I'm going to say that I need to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm spoofing my world.
Love it.
And I think that's fun.
Now,
it makes it fun for me.
One of the most Emmy-worthy lines ever on a television show has got to be, and I quote, "The impact of his fall must have knocked off his swimsuit," end quote. Do we even need to get into that? Folks need to just see that scene and know that that's Emmy-worthy stuff right there. I love it.
Here's a little tidbit. Like, because I did need to have, it was a requirement for me, and is it a requirement for my character, to have full frontal nudity in every episode. So how I dealt with that in a way that I thought would be funny, you know, and not like, it's just like, oh, let's all stop and look at the wonderful body parts, was to make all my dead bodies naked. So it doesn't matter how they die, they're naked. The end result is the body lands on the floor and there's no clothes on it. So it doesn't start out naked, it just ends up by the time it hits the floor that way.
What do writers call that plot device?
I don't know. I call it, I gotta get the guy naked without showing anything before. So...
Which will, from here on out, be known as the Terry Ray. I'm going to coin it right now.
I'll take ownership of it. Yeah, I think it might be my original idea. Right?
I love it.
So it's a little bit of a treat to find out how each character dies.
I love it. Now, we haven't even mentioned this part. So many amazing actors on there, and I don't want to just single one out, but how can we not talk about Emmy Award winner Juliette Mills?
I know. I have to say, I tingle at the thought of having Juliette Mills in my show. I really do. I mean, it's the nanny from The Nanny and Professor. She is so great. And here's the thing. I mean, and you're going to talk to Sam Irvin later, and he's the reason we have Juliette. So I had not met her until we literally were shooting, and I had never heard her speak the words that I wrote before. And so I'm like acting across from her, and I was like, oh my God, she's so great. Terry, remember to act. You've got to remember to act. You cannot think about that. You have to remember you're acting. And, cause she's just awesome. I love her. She's terrific to work with. Such a team player and so brave to do the show. I mean, really brave.
And threatens you right on screen, right at the start.
Yeah, I love that part. I love that she's completely two-faced, which I wanted that. I wanted her to be able to get to play that. So great.
Now, there is another scene that actually happened several times, and this is, I got to walk you through what was going on in my head. I used to be a big fan, I still am a big fan of Paula Poundstone, and she used to have this bit in her act where it was all about, I swear this is going somewhere, about a Snickers commercial, and she just can't imagine that some of the stage directions were written down on a page somewhere, okay? So this is what I was thinking as I watched several times the opening credits to the show within a show, Guy Dubai, International Gay Spy. Yeah. I would pay you to see what is written down on a page somewhere to describe what is happening in those opening credits, we're a family show, so I don't know how much I can really say, but holy cow, Terry.
Now, here's the truth. Here's the truth. That's Sam. I did not write that bump. The opening animated thing that just happened in post-production.
Okay.
There was the end of that was added after I saw it. And then when I did see it, my teeth fell out of my head thinking, can we really do that?
We can't even talk about it. This is so titillating for our listeners. You have
and
to watch
like,
it.
My mother, my poor mother.
Oh, my God.
I know. It goes there. It really goes there. So,
it makes me think that when this comes out on DVD, I don't even know what could be in the director's cut.
There's nothing. We had to move so fast. It's all right there.
Oh, man.
We didn't cut anything. Yeah.
Well, what we've decided to do with you, sir, is we're going to play one of our games that we normally play with our celebrity couples or just folks that have been on the show, and we're going to play this game with you and Sam. And so what I'm going to do, Terry, is I'm going to ask you 5 questions, okay? And then we're going to ask Sam these questions later on, and if you guys match on 3 out of the 5 questions, we're going to send you some This Show Is So Gay swag.
Oh, my God. And besides, I love the name of your show. It's my favorite radio show name ever. So I would flag with that on there.
We're going to get you a This Show Is So Gay magnet if you guys match 3 out of 5.
Oh, my God. All right. This is important then. Okay.
you're like a professional game show guy, so I'm not that worried about you. I might be a little bit worried about Sam, but we'll see. And, of course.
Yeah, so if we don't match, it's totally going to be Sam's fault because he didn't match.
Oh, without question. Right. Without question. No, that's been predetermined. And, of course, our listeners and the This Show Is So Gay host trust in your honor, and Sam will not get these answers from you. So
No.
Okay. Here we go. You ready? Here are your 5 questions. Question number 1. And they're all questions that relate to the new sitcom called From Here On Out.
Oh, good. I love talking about that. Okay, great.
Okay.
Here we go.
Which character would Sam say is most like Sam?
Oh, that's most like Sam?
Yeah.
That's very easy. That one's Jimmy.
Okay. See, I threw in some easy ones. They're going to get a little harder, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, question number 2. What would Sam say was the most difficult scene to shoot?
What would Sam say was the most difficult scene to shoot? Of the 2 episodes that you've seen or the series?
Go for the series.
I'm going to say the very last scene of the last episode.
Okay. We're going to leave that vague because we don't want to know what that is yet.
Right.
Okay. Question number 3. If you, Terry, were to take on another role in the crew, what role would Sam say you would take on?
Oh, my God.
I know these are not easy.
That is a toughie. But the crew, I would say I would have to be gunning for his job.
Wow.
The director.
There you go. This just got uncomfortable. Question number 4. What was the funniest or most memorable thing that Juliet Mills did on set?
Oh, my God. She's so funny. The first thing that comes to my mind, and I guess I'm going to go with that, is because it's the first time you get to see her do that change, is that her line of, I'm going to F you up.
Okay. You got Juliet Mills to say it. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Because it's the first time you really get a feeling for what's happening with her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Last question. Question number 5.
Don't screw up.
Oh, by the way, I just want to ruin the ending for you. We're going to send you a magnet anyway, but we still want you to win.
Okay, great.
Question number 5. With which character would Sam say that he would most like to be stranded on a desert island?
Ooh. I am going to say Brad.
Brad. And you know what? We're going to throw in a bonus question just in case because some of these were really hard. With which character would you, Terry, say that you would most likely to be stranded on a desert island?
I would say Rico.
Okay. We have entered in these answers. They have been locked in. And our listeners, you just wait a few minutes because Sam will be on and we'll see how they did. So this is very exciting time for you. I mean, when you think about Friday, March 28th, 2014, is there a party? What are you going to do?
I haven't even gotten to think about it yet as far as, like, what am I going to do that night? I gotta subscribe to Hear TV for one thing.
Well, let's talk about that. So how do you feel, as someone who wrote this, how do you feel about that it is a more limited audience that will see it? Which I so appreciate that I was able to go on YouTube and check it out and got some links. But I want everyone to see this.
Yeah, well, you know what? Everyone can check out the first two episodes.
Yeah.
You can. They have offered the first two episodes on YouTube so that people can get a taste of the show. So definitely do that. And I'm hoping that it will, that they will be seen by a growing here TV audience.
Yeah.
Because I feel like this may be the biggest crossover show they've had. I know that Dante's Cove was enjoyed by straight ladies.
Sure.
I think that this show is made for a gay audience, and I don't want to take anything away from that. Like, the gay audience is our audience. But for example, our crew were all straight guys, and our cameraman was this guy who's worked in the business forever. His name's Howard Wexler. He's fantastic. I think he might be in his 60s. That's a guess. I think he might be in his 60s. Not our target audience, but a straight guy in his 60s. But he was like, this is funny. And after a while, I mean, some of the crew people were saying, you know, I was telling my girlfriend, I was telling my wife about the show, and it's like, I'd watch the show, and I can't believe I'm saying that. But I thought that was pretty flattering.
Totally. Totally. Tell everyone, for your last pitch of the interview, tell everyone why they should check out From Here On Out.
I would like to say check it out because funny is funny, and if you like funny, you'll like the show.
There you go. Well, as I was watching it, I was thinking, I mean, I was laughing, and then I was reading about your bio, and take this as you will, but I really was thinking, my gosh, Charles Nelson Reilly would have loved this.
Oh, that is so sweet. I mean, I one of my acting classmates sent me a message, and she said, Charles would be so proud of you, and that just kind of almost makes me cry, because I loved him, and I think that he would be proud, so I appreciate you saying that.
Yes, well, there is a wit and a humor, and truly a humanity, too, that just runs throughout the show. It premieres on Friday, March 28th, 2014. The name of the new comedy is From Here On Out. We're going to have Sam, the director, on in a little bit. Terry Ray, what an absolute treat to have you on the show.
Thank you, Ken. I really appreciate you talking about the show, and I can't wait for that magnet, really.
You're going to win it. I don't think it's going to be the whole pity thing where I have
it's
to just
gonna
send
be a pity
you one.
One
no.
You know, I'm used to winning on these game shows. So
I know. So,
Sam,
yes.
Come on, Sam.
We'll see what happens. Terry, all the best for these upcoming next couple of weeks. Just so exciting and so well-deserved.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, folks, and we are back with our next amazing guest, continuing our focus on the new project From Here On Out. Sam Ervin is a veteran director, producer, screenwriter for movies and television. He's directed just a ton of movies, including Guilty as Charged, Out There, Elvira's Haunted Hills, Fat Rose and Squeaky, and Kiss of a Stranger, which he also wrote. He's directed episodes of Comedy Central's Strip Mall, as well as a ton of episodes for Dante's Cove, for which he also wrote the theme song. Sam's other credits include co-executive producing Bill Condon's Academy Award-winning motion picture, Gods and Monsters. It's one of my personal faves. And co-producing the gay favorite, The Broken Hearts Club. While writing his book, Kay Thompson, From Funny Face to Eloise, Sam served as a historical consultant for the Tony Award-winning Broadway show Liza's at the Palace, and he produced the 3-CD compilation, Think Pink, a Kay Thompson party. He's won awards from the Provincetown International Film Festival, the World Fest Houston, and he's been recognized by the Chicago International Film Festival. His current project is directing the comedy we're talking about all episode long from here on out. Sam Ervin, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Good Lord, Ken, that is a mouthful. You did your homework.
And there was so much I left out, but we would have no time to talk, Sam.
Exactly. So, good grief. I'm feeling very old after all that.
And by old, you mean accomplished. Very good, Sam.
All right, we'll put it that way.
So much to talk about, sir. Are you ready?
I am ready.
I was looking back over just our guest list for the past 6 years, and we've not had a ton of directors on the show, so this is very exciting. How would you go about describing your voice as a director?
Well, it's an interesting question. I love all genres and have directed in just about every genre imaginable. I just love film as entertainment, and I think that I'm drawn to projects that are probably maybe a little more plot-driven than character-driven pieces. I just really like great stories that have great characters, but something that has a really fun narrative that has a beginning, middle, and an end, and is sometimes described more as popcorn kind of movies, and that's what I'm really drawn to doing, whether it's a comedy, whether it's a horror film, whether it's a murder mystery. I really like to entertain, and that's what I'm all about.
I perhaps made the mistake this morning, and it had nothing to do with preparing to speak with you. I just stumbled across this whole YouTube movie about Joseph Mankiewicz and his relationship with all of the actors on All About Eve and all the contention. What would your actors generally say about you?
I hope the opposite.
Yes.
I think that I'm pretty well liked by actors. I get along really, really well with them, and I try to create a really creative atmosphere, and I don't give a ton of direction. I let the actors breathe and have elbow room and bring to the table what they have prepared, and I see that and give some tweakage here and there, and you know, I just love to see them create, and I try to create an atmosphere where they feel really comfortable and they trust me to be, you know, the eyes and ears of the audience and to rein them in when they need to be reined in or goose them when they need to be a little more out there. And, you know, I adore my actors. We all become, you know, little families with each of these projects.
Now, I was reading about you had such a formative experience early on in your career serving as an assistant to the just legendary Brian De Palma.
Well, I was a huge fan of Hitchcock growing up and horror films and really all kinds of films, but I was particularly a lover of Hitchcock. And in the early 70s, I, you know, was in film school and taking Hitchcock courses, and there was this upstart director, Brian De Palma, who was making films that were very Hitchcockian back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Things like Sisters, which drew very heavily on Psycho, Obsession, that drew very heavily on Vertigo, and he even hired one of Hitchcock's frequent composers, Bernard Herrmann, to do the score for Sisters and Obsession. And so there were all these Hitchcockian connections to De Palma that I really loved. And then he also made a film called Phantom of the Paradise, which was a comedy musical rock update of Phantom of the Opera. And Phantom of the Opera was such a film that was a real seminal favorite of mine. And I loved his sort of spoofing of that. And then you know, I just decided in school that, you know, I'd like to start a little Brian De Palma festival and see if we can get him to come here, because I was, you know, in a film committee on campus and running the film, you know, the theater on campus and stuff. So I somehow got him on the phone. He was in Los Angeles at the time casting a little picture called Carrie. And in those casting sessions, sitting right next to him was George Lucas, and George Lucas and he were reading every young actor in town for two movies, for Carrie and for Star Wars.
Oh, my gosh.
Everyone who came in read for both movies. Anyway, it became, you know, obviously it became in retrospect you know, this legendary casting session. Well, somehow I got put through to De Palma on the phone during a break. And I explained, you know, that I was basically a groupie and I wanted him to come to the University of South Carolina where I was going to school to appear at this little festival of his early films. And he said, listen, I'm broke. I need to get back to New York where I live for the weekend. If you can give me a plane fare from L.A. to South Carolina, then to New York, and then back to L.A., I'll come. And I said, you got it. And so I met him at that time, and then the following year, between my, I guess, junior and senior year, he was doing, you know, Carrie, of course, became a huge hit.
And oh, yeah.
He did a follow-up film called The Fury, which also dealt with telekinesis, and it had Kirk Douglas and John Cassavetes and Amy Irving and this whole huge cast of great actors. And I called him up again and said, hey, can I come and work on that as an intern or whatever you'll let me do during the summer of, I guess, 1977? And they were shooting in Chicago, and he said, sure, come on up. So I worked as a PA, a production assistant, rather, and I appeared in the film several times as an extra. I totally ham it up. If you're looking for me, it becomes a drinking game, and you'll get quite drunk because I must appear in about 20 shots. And then I also got an assignment from a magazine called Cine Fantastique, which dealt with horror films and all, and I got an assignment to write a journal on the making of the film, which
wow.
enabled me to have one-on-one interviews with all these great people, from Kirk Douglas to John Cassavetes, who I had just taken a course on of his films as a director, and you know, everybody involved in the film. So it was such a learning experience, and you know, part of a very big part of my education. So long story longer, the following year, I graduate in the spring, and De Palma calls me, and I'm like, okay, this I'm liking this. And he goes, listen, I just taught a course at Sarah Lawrence College on screenwriting. The students and I have written a script called Home Movies, and I've decided that I'm going to direct it as a low-budget movie this summer, and if you want to work on it, come on up. And it's going to star Kirk Douglas and Nancy Allen and Keith Gordon. And I'm like, you know, the phone conversation hadn't even ended, and I was on my way to the airport. And I get up there, and I think that I'm just going to be a PA and an extra like I was on The Fury.
Right.
And I step off the plane, and he goes, okay, you're going to be the associate producer and production manager.
Wow.
And I, you know, it was just like throwing me into the deep end and to see if I could swim. And part of it was because they had no money, and it was the crew was non-union, and, you know, he just, I guess, had some trust that I was going to pull through. So that was, you know, really the beginning of my career. And after that, I continued working with him as his assistant on Dress to Kill and a little bit on Blowout, and then he recommended me to produce a film of another protege of his, and it just, you know, I got my start and owe my career to De Palma. He really, really, absolutely gave me the springboard to get going. Okay, now we've taken up way too much time with that. Next.
No, my mouth is a guy. That's one of those stories. I'm sure you have the sense that's perhaps not the experience of all of your fellow directors.
No, it's not. It's a really unique. I mean, everybody has a unique way of getting their first, you know, project going. But this was my path.
And yeah.
And after that, I did a short film called Double Negative that starred William Finley, who was the star of De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise.
Right.
He played the Phantom. And he also played the villain in Sisters, and also cast Wayne Knight, who you'll remember as Newman.
Of course.
Seinfeld, and Justin Henry, the little kid from Kramer versus Kramer.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it was a little movie about a director whose sleazy producers decide that they'll make more money if they steal the negative and collect the insurance. And the director finds out about their plot and has to thwart their little scheme in order to save his film.
Oh, my gosh.
And it got accepted in Sundance and played theatrically in New York and L.A. It played with some very, you know, big filmmakers' movies. It played with Martin Scorsese's After Hours and, you know, some other big films. It got some attention, and that's what really, you know, I was able to use that as kind of my calling card and showpiece to get my first feature going, which was Guilty as Charged in 1990. Whew. Okay.
Wow. Well, let's turn the tables. Let's turn the tables a little bit, because that's so much about your journey. But then you also serve so much on the other side, where you work with graduate students, where you've taught classes on directing, taught classes on the lens of the camera for all of our up-and-coming directors, folks who are really looking to immerse themselves in cinema in that way. What is that one piece of advice that you start everybody out on?
Well, I tell them that, first of all, if you want to be a director, you have to look at this as a career. I mean, people will come to me and say, well, I think I'm going to come to L.A. and give it 2 years, and if I don't get a directing thing off the ground in that amount of time, then I'm going to give up and go back home and, you know, get a regular job. And
right.
I'm like, well, you know what? Just go ahead and stay where you are, because if it's not in your blood and you're going to, you know, stick with it forever, then, you know, you're not going to survive in this business. There's way too much competition. There's way too many people who are passionate about this. And so that's the main advice that I give. I teach graduate courses on directing at USC here in Los Angeles, and the students are wildly varied in terms of their passion and in terms of what they think a directing career is going to be all about. And I'll just give you one other major piece of advice.
Please.
I give, and that is that this is show business. Unless you are independently wealthy and you're writing the check to pay for your own movie, you have to realize that you have investors to answer to, and you're going to be collaborating with a ton of people, not only your actors, but all the other department heads. And you've got to look at it as a huge collaboration and a huge responsibility. And if your vision is too personal, too idiosyncratic, sure, you might get that one Sundance film or festival movie that gets some attention, but you also have to have a career in mind and understand that your movies have to actually be seen by eyeballs and eyeballs that have wallets, you know?
Right.
And that there's got to, you know, you have to balance that. You have to learn that, you know, you're going to be making some compromises from time to time, and you've got to be able to figure out what audiences want to see, not just what you want to see.
Over your career, you've been involved with so many either just explicitly LGBT or certainly LGBT-related content like Elvira, but also, you know, as I said, the Broken Hearts Club, Dante's Cove, the new project which we're going to talk about. In the most basic sense, why is that important to you? Why is it important to you to get involved with LGBT-themed projects?
Well, I've been openly gay forever, and I'm always drawn to that type of subject matter. However, you know, there's a ton of projects in my resume that don't have any gay characters.
A ton, yeah.
So it's not something that is a prerequisite. But, you know, a lot of gay projects do come across my desk. And, you know, the people at Here TV, for instance, Paul Kolishman, who is one of the co-heads of Here TV and owns The Advocate and Out, and he gave me my first break directing. My very first feature, Guilty as Charged, was back in 1990 when he was president of IRS Media, which was a film production company, part of IRS Records with Miles Copeland. And Paul has, you know, remained so supportive of my career all of these years, and I've worked off and on for him at various companies, and certainly over the last many years at Here TV. I did their premiere series, Dante's Cove, directed all 3 seasons, and by the way, we have a 4th season. We're bringing it back, and we're in heavy-duty development on that, and it's going to be filming later this year. So,
so exciting.
Exciting news break for everybody. But Paul has just been really supportive, and a lot of the projects that are being done for Here TV have gay characters and gay themes, and so I keep getting back into those kinds of projects, and I'm very happy about it because I love doing it.
Well, let's talk about from here on out. Now, we had Terry Ray on the show earlier, and we learned some things about you. This is what we learned. First of all, we learned that we have you. You are the one responsible for bringing us Juliet Mills onto the show.
Well, this is how it all happened. Big fan of Juliet and her husband, Maxwell Caulfield. I cast Maxwell in a film I did back in 1995, probably before some of you were even born. It was a sequel to a sci-fi western I had done called Oblivion, and the sequel was called Backlash Oblivion 2, and Maxwell plays a bounty hunter. And so I met him at that time. He was fantastic in the film. And then a few years go by, and I'm directing episodes of Julie Brown's series Strip Mall for Comedy Central. And Maxwell was one of the cast members and of the ensemble on that show. And so we reunited then. And through Max, I, of course, had met his wife, Juliet, socially, and always was looking for an opportunity to work with her. So flash forward, we're developing from here on out and casting it. And the character is a former nanny who is now the receptionist of the president of Here TV, the fictionalized president of Here TV, who is an 18-year-old spoiled brat.
Yes.
And so his former nanny is now the receptionist, kind of keeping him in line and running things. And I just thought, well, if we need Juliet Mills, she's the go-to person to be a former nanny, because she was on The Nanny and The Professor, and I just thought, you know, this would be really, really fun. And I presented her with the scripts and got down on my knees and begged and convinced her that all the bawdiness and nudity and everything else was going to be handled with
taste.
Some modicum of taste, maybe. And her big question was, as long as I don't have to do nudity, I'm in.
Oh, man. Okay, so we learned that you're responsible for that, but we also learned, and I'm going to put this on the flip side, we also learned that you perhaps are responsible, and there's only so much we can say about this because people need to, our listeners need to see this to actually fully grasp it, but the opening credits for the show within a show, Guy Dubai, International Gay Spy, gosh, I'm not even really sure, Sam, how to describe what happens really at the end of those opening credits, but we did learn that you are responsible for that. Is that true?
Let's just say it's very climactic.
Very climactic, yes. Keeping in mind, this is a family show, Sam. It's a family show.
Yeah, family is not quite the word I was thinking of.
Ours is a family show. I'm not saying anything about Guy Dubai.
Yeah. All right. So, there's just this graphic that comes on of the actor who plays Guy Dubai in the show within the show. And, there's a little animation bit that definitely pushes the limit of taste. But anyway, we'll leave it at that. We'll just tantalize people. They're going to have to go see it.
And is it indeed true that you bear some responsibility for that?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to move on. We're going to move on.
Yeah, we'll just move on.
Well, I know that you've been tipped off a little bit to this, but as our listeners just heard, we played a game with Terry Ray. He has answered 6 questions about From Here On Out, and the goal is for you two to match, because as I'm sure you know, Terry, a huge game show contestant, and quite a bit of notoriety for that. So he is taking this very seriously. If you match him on 3 of these 6 questions, you guys win some This Show Is So Gay swag. And as I think you heard from Terry, he's very serious about this.
He is very serious. And I will tell you all, full disclosure, he told me that there is some kind of game, and he told me that I better freaking win.
Oh, yeah. I think you're going to do okay.
Swag.
I think you're going to do okay. I'm feeling pretty good about this. Are you ready to play?
Did not tip me off on anything.
Okay.
So, you know, and now, the other thing I'll just caveat, I'm in the middle of shooting another film, and I am completely zonked, so if my brain isn't working, I plead innocent.
That's totally fine. As you will hear, we promised Terry a magnet anyway, because we were a little nervous about him losing, so it's okay. And we want to maintain your professional relationship with him, which if you don't win, I'm a little worried about. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready to play, and I'm really hoping that I come through for Terry.
I'm feeling good about it. All right, question number one. Which character on From Here On Out, this was our easy one, or I shouldn't say that because now if you get it wrong, we're all going to feel bad.
Thanks.
Sorry. Which character on From Here On Out would you say is most like you, Sam?
Well, it's obviously Jimmy, the character played by Terry Ray. Literally, he is a writer who comes to Here TV and presents them with his latest script for a series called Guy Dubai, International Gay Spy, and wants to get it greenlit. And it is greenlit. And the budget's so low, they decide to also make him the producer and the director. And I read like three or four pages of the script, and I'm going, oh, my God, this is my life story. How the hell did Terry even know all these great things that I go through all the time? There were so many things that I had been through on Dante's Cove working for Here TV that were being spoofed in this. So, yeah, that is absolutely the character, Jimmy.
And that is indeed the correct answer. Very good.
Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, we have our sound effects. Don't you worry.
Okay. Right.
That's what we add in post-production. Question number two. What would you say, Sam, was the most difficult scene for you to shoot so far? And I'll help you a little here. Terry kept it pretty vague. He gave us a certain episode. He didn't necessarily tell us what happened.
Wow.
I know. I told you they got harder.
Well, it's not very exciting, but I for me, probably the most difficult scene was the very last scene of the final episode of episode 6, only because it included all the characters. We were practically out of time.
That is indeed the exact correct answer. He said the very last scene of the last episode.
Wow.
See? Doing so well. Doing so well.
Woo.
All right. Now, this is the one we're a little bit nervous about. But question number three. If Terry were to take on an additional role in the crew, what did he say that he would take on?
Craft service? No. I'm joking. Let's see. I don't know. He might want to take my job, damn it.
He does indeed want to take your job. He would like to direct. That is your third correct answer.
Damn him. I just won on the one where I'm giving up my job to him. Good Lord.
So you've already won the swag. We're going to go for a perfect six, so we're going to see what happens. What did Terry say was the funniest or most memorable thing that Juliet Mills did on set?
Wow, now that's a hard one.
That's a hard one.
He did a lot of funny things.
And I'll give you a hint because I'm feeling magnanimous.
Okay.
He provided a line that she said in the show.
Oh, okay. Well, there's one. We beefed up the character of Brad, the sexy assistant to Taylor. And Terry came up with this great running gag that the guy has to keep taking off his shirt because it keeps getting wet for various reasons. And in one of her, I guess it is her first scene, Juliet Mills tells Brad, oh, the air conditioning is leaking from the ceiling. Could you go check that, Brad? And when he turns around, she gets a water gun and squirts him on his back, which he thinks is the water dripping from the air conditioning vent. And he, of course, takes off his shirt right in front of Terry Ray's character, whose mouth drops to the floor because the guy is drop-dead gorgeous. And Terry came up with this line as the guy leaves the room. As soon as he leaves the room, she turns to Terry and she goes, like shooting fish in a barrel.
I did enjoy that scene. I will say no. Terry said he just enjoys when Juliet Mills says, I'm going to F you up.
Yes, that's a great one, too. Yeah, I mean, there's so many. Just really.
No, it's brilliant.
That brings up another point.
Please.
The show has lots of nudity, and it's very bawdy, and it's crazy, and yet there are no four-letter words in it. That's the closest we come is when she says, I'm going to F you up. And that's exactly how she says it. She doesn't say the full word. And I love the innocence of that, and I thought that was such a wonderful little juxtaposition of how, you know, outrageous and bawdy our show is, and yet the language in it is very sweet. I think it's a if you're a fan of 30 Rock, I think you're going to love this show, because I very much was inspired by 30 Rock being a show about the behind the scenes of making a show and spoofing a network in the way that 30 Rock spoofs NBC,
yeah,
and we spoof Here TV. There's lots of parallels. And 30 Rock always had this wonderful little innocence about it. And that was something that I, you know, felt really strongly we needed to bring to, you know, the table. And Terry agreed, and you know, we kept the language very clean in contrast to everything else.
Well, no, as we talked about with Terry, it's so enjoyable. So enjoyable. All right, last two, and these are quick ones. We'll see how you do with these. With which character would you, Sam, most like to be stranded on a desert island?
Oh, good Lord. That, there's about, I don't know, there's good grief. Okay, well then I'm just going to, I'm going to have to say Jimmy, because Terry Ray is so freaking funny and I love to laugh.
No, indeed, he said it would be Brad.
Well, I certainly wouldn't mind that.
And the last one, which character did Terry say he would most like to be stranded on a desert island with?
Oh, no, that's a tough one. I think he'd like to be stranded on a desert island with Davina, played by Suzanne Watt.
You went for such noble answers. Terry, although, Terry said Rico.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well. I know. I guess if we get down to our types, you know, okay, he probably hit the nail on the head.
There you go. We'll run with that one. Well, tell everybody what you're working on next. We got From Here On Out is going to be debuting Friday, March 28th, exclusively on Here TV. What else do you have coming up, sir?
Right after we did From Here On Out, I directed a cable thriller called Fatal Acquittal that stars Jolie Fisher and Denise Richards and Patrick Muldoon and Jim O'Hare from Parks and Recreation and Deborah Wilson from Mad TV. And that'll be airing sometime later this year. We're not sure which network yet. And then right now I'm directing another Christmas movie. This will be my third. It's turning into a new little cottage industry for me.
Love it.
And so, you know, that's what's going on. Then I start a thriller next month, and then we hope shortly after that to do a season of 6 episodes of Dante's Cove, and then we have another 6 episodes of From Here On Out.
Awesome.
Another season of that that's already written, and we're starting to prep.
Well, as we talked about with Terry, From Here On Out, I watched the first two episodes. Everybody's going to check it out on Friday, March 28th, exclusively on Here TV. So enjoyable, so quick-witted, so funny, so engaging, and you did a great job, sir.
Thank you, thank you. We're very proud of it, so check it out.
We all will do that. Sam, what an absolute treat having you on the show.
Thanks, Ken. I really appreciate your support and love doing it, love playing the game.
All right, that about wraps things up for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. Our huge thanks to Terry Ray and to Sam Ervin. If you're not getting the picture, let me spell it out for you. You must go check out From Here On Out when it debuts on Here TV, or you could just go to YouTube right this very second and watch the first two episodes. So many exciting things coming up on our show. On next week's show, we have the one and only Bibi Zahara-Benet, the first ever winner of RuPaul's Drag Race. And we have Nathan Runkle, the executive director of Mercy for Animals. And he has not been on the show in like 4 to 5 years. So we're so excited to catch up with him. And we just booked Kurt Loder for the week after that. Kurt Loder of MTV and Rolling Stone fame. So that is so exciting. For now, folks, get out there. Go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice in the way you know how to use it best to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you are out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?